This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. The Ministry of Education is working towards integrating special needs children into mainstream schools. As part of this effort, MOE teachers are currently undergoing training on how to manage and facilitate this integration. Joining me today are clinical psychologist Joshebed Isaacs, who is a trainer involved in this initiative, Dr. Nan Hui from the Wisconsin Early Autism Project, to discuss what we can learn from the U.S. model in our implementation of inclusive education. And also joining us is Sue Se Hua, the principal and director of the Sam McCoy Foundation, a center for people with special needs. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
I think, many people share this notion that children with disabilities need to be educated in separate classes or in separate schools. Does special education equate to separate education?
In the U.S. model, no. In the U.S., we always say that every child is entitled to a free and appropriate public education, and the keywords being free and appropriate. So as long as the child can access the curriculum and receive appropriate education, it may be in mainstream that if the child does have a special need or disability, they can be in a mainstream class if that's appropriate. They may have a combination of being in the mainstream class and have some special services, maybe pull-out services, additional services. So that's how in the U.S. we define education, what is, what every child is entitled to.
What about Malaysia?
In Malaysia, most of the parents wish that their children can go to normal school with the mainstream. Unfortunately, they have a certain criteria for them to enter the mainstream. So if they have got a history of any form of disability set up by the Ministry of Social Welfare, we call it the JKM, or they have got learning disabilities given a report by the kindergarten, then they have got to inform the school that they're registered in. Then they will put them in the special classes. That's called integration. Then hoping that after integration in the special classes, they will go into the normal mainstream. Unfortunately, about 10% of the children with special needs are able to do that. There's integration into special classes in a normal school. But there are also children who have got severe to moderate disabilities who are unable to have access to the special classes in the normal school, and they are put somewhere else. Yeah. And this is where I come in to help them.
I think just to add to that, Lynn, yeah. I think we have to look at each child's needs individually. So I think if it's going to be as black and white as do we put them in a mainstream class or do we put them in a separate class, I think that's difficult to categorize black and white.
Yes.
Because when it comes to autism specifically, there's enough research that shows applied behavioral analysis done in a one-to-one format at an early age can actually greatly reduce the delays, the deficits, and actually help the child be more ready for inclusion into a typical school than to just immediately, let's say, start going straight into a mainstream school if the child does not have sufficient prerequisite skills to be successful. So for us at Early Autism Project, the most important thing is that the child is having a successful and meaningful experience. So if the child with autism has got a lot of areas of challenge or, delay, then what's critical is to close that gap or to try and help develop that child's skills as quickly as possible. And that is oftentimes achieved the best way in a one-to-one setup that's intensive.
Yeah, so in my center, for example, when a child comes to see me at about 2.5 years old, I did an assessment and I found that they're autistic and they got different levels of autism. Then I started the individualized education plan and we start the early intervention program as well. And we have got the occupational therapists coming in, the speech therapists coming in, the music therapists and all the other therapists come in, and we reduce their behavior that is not appropriate for them to do so in the mainstream. So we try to reduce their antisocial behaviors to the best of our ability before they reach the age of school, going into 6. So this early intervention program is for about 2 to 3 years. But some may stay on for about 3 to 4 years. The EIP program, that is called the Individualized Education Plan. And most of them, if they start early, they have got a better chance to go into mainstream education.
it is safe to say, I think, that it's not just about the child having to adapt to the school, because the school system will also need to adapt to the child.
You're absolutely right.
What are some of the crucial ways in which, you know, you need to kind of bridge that gap and meet in the middle, especially from the school's perspective?
So in the U.S., we have an established process, and it is called the Individualized Education Plan, IEP. And there is a set of specific federal and state laws governing, you know, what rights parents and children have and what kind of responsibilities a school district, a given school has. Okay. So because it has been established for a long time, there is a process to, you know, refer, assess, identify the specific areas of needs, and documenting what services will be provided and how the child's progress will be monitored. So that's kind of the established process in the U.S.
Yeah. In my center, we are also doing the same thing, you know, doctor. But because we are running on a shoestring budget, so we assess our children as we go along, once in 6 months minimum or once in 9 months minimum, on the need or whether they need different areas of therapy. And we approach the therapist to give more therapy for this particular child. And then we refer them to different therapists. And as they go on better and better in their learning skills and behavior skills and physical skills, and we will recommend to the school to put them in the mainstream education for inclusive education instead of in special classes. So in my school, we got about 35 to 37 since we started in 2008, you know, that has gone into mainstream education, inclusive education, and some to special classes. First of all, they were not even allowed to go into special classes in the mainstream.
So in the U.S., this individualized education plan is part of every public school. It is not a separate agency's responsibility.
It's the education.
Yes, there is a team within each public school, you know, or several different teams. They may be taking care of different grade level, and it always requires the participation of parents, special education teachers, the general education teacher, and depending on the child's specific needs, speech or OT or physical therapists. Within the school. So it's a whole package coming with the special education system there.
Joshabet, at this point, do you think Malaysian schools or the Malaysian system is prepared for something even, you know, close to what the US system has?
I think at this point, I mean, even from our discussion today, you know, the scene, I think, in Malaysia, Dr. Nan, is it's very much pioneered by parents like Madam Su here of a child with special needs. And a lot of the pioneers, I think, in special education belong to the NGOs, people with really great hearts and, you know, and families and people who want to help out. Overall, though, I think that there is there is still areas to develop in terms of the understanding of the need for governance, training, qualities, standards and policies when it comes to special education. So let's say 10 years ago, you know, it would be very volunteer-based. It's not like taken in the same seriousness, let's say, as a medical doctor or medical conditions where you need to have clear training, clear qualifications. Right. You can't just start a practice or a clinic without fulfilling these requirements. Yes. So I think based on that, we are quite, we still have a lot of way to go. I think when it comes to, let's say, school, it's a mindset of how important and valuable is special education. And if once that mindset is set, then all the moves will start to happen based on budgeting, resource. I mean, our classroom sizes itself, 40 children per class is really too large. And I think even our typical children, a lot of them need support in the sense of tuition after school. So what more a child with special needs? We find that it's hard for that to be a really successful environment for them based on classroom sizes, based on the teachers' limited attention because of lack of resource, based on the bilingual language. They already have a difficulty with language. So learning multiple languages at the same time will be a challenge.
What Dr. Han is doing in America, I'm trying to start up a school called a School of Light under the American program, and also a bit of UK base in the syllabus, that every child has got a right to a decent education in respective of their disability and in respective of their financial background. Even though the government is not ready to mainstream children into the normal school yet, because they don't have the budget, don't have the staffing yet, and the proper needs and the requirement for them to go in. So by setting up the School of Light, we can start the child as early as 2 years old, so that we are preparing them for mainstreaming and inclusive education. The government is actually now at the moment doing that by a branch called Permata Kunia in Dr. Process, but that is only for very mild autism children. But what about the moderate to severe autistic children and the older autistic children that are now above 6 years old to 25 years old, for example, in the School of Light? So we have got a lot of programs for them.
I'm speaking today with Joshebed Isaacs and Dr. Nan Hui, clinical psychologists. Yeah. Joshebed from the Early Autism Project and Dr. Nan from the Wisconsin Early Autism Project, as well as Madam Sue, the principal and director of the Sam McCoy Foundation. And we are discussing how to integrate special needs children into mainstream schools. Up next, we find out whether there's a strong base to support the education of children with disabilities here in Malaysia. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. And we have a full studio today. I have Joshebed Isaacs, clinical psychologist from the Early Autism Project, Dr. Nan Hui, also a clinical psychologist from the Wisconsin Early Autism Project, and Madam Sue, the principal and director of the Sam McCoy Foundation. We are discussing the process and really the thoughts behind integrating special needs children into mainstream schools. Now, is there a strong research base at the moment to support the idea that children with disabilities or with different needs should be educated alongside their non-disabled peers?
So in the U.S., equality, we highly value equality and non-discrimination is very important. It's an important value, I would say, a cornerstone of United States. So we embrace, as Joe said, that mindset. It's not without struggle. Okay, we had gone through the dark periods of discrimination, segregation, part of our history. But we have changed. We have embraced diversity in all senses, disability, including disability or special needs. So that is why we have the special education law, ensuring the rights of children and families. So in terms of research, we know that if we provide appropriate education to children, using autism as an example, we know that if provided appropriate empirically validated interventions such as applied behavior analysis-based intervention, children with autism can make significant improvements. Some of them, about half of them, can catch up to their typically developing peers and can participate more fully with their age-typical peers. So that is a finding that has been validated across different countries, U.S., U.K., Australia. We know that as a fact, and I would think that can be generalized to children who has different diagnoses. If we give them the appropriate education, we can maximize their potential. Okay, maybe some children with significant challenges, but the fact that if they can learn daily living skills, they can become more independent and engaging in more meaningful leisure activities, that is a meaningful and functional goal for those individuals.
So in your opinion, then, in the United States, with this plan in place, with these policies in place, has integration on a whole been successful?
I would say yes. There are still states, different variation among the states. Okay. But more recently, I can use two examples to show how the inclusive society has worked. So recently, Target, the big department store, they have announced the policy to hire. They have a target percentage of staff that they are hiring who have special needs. Similarly, Walgreens has adopted similar policy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even in my local store, when I go shopping, I can see individuals with special needs working side by side with other colleagues.
Great.
And that creates a general community of acceptance, a true and real acceptance of individual differences.
Well, I want to bring that to a Malaysian context. You know, Joshbet, Madam Su, it's a beautiful idea to think that, you know, people with special needs could work alongside everybody else, you know, without there being any indication of difference. But here, I think even in our schools, we might struggle to see that, you know, children may still be treated differently, whether by their peers or even by the, by adults, you know. So how do we get to that point where there is social integration, where people can kind of sit next to somebody with autism in a classroom and not tease them or, you know, not have that problem?
One of the things that we want to do next year with our 10-year anniversary of celebrating our 10 years in Malaysia is to actually run an acceptance campaigns in schools. So in our 10 years, we find working with private and international schools, that's more of where our children have transitioned to, and inclusion has been more successful in private and international schools. So we plan to have these acceptance campaigns where basically a supervisor from our company would actually go in and have a session with the children, whether it's a small classroom or whether it's the full assembly, but actually talking about celebrating differences. And they won't just be specific about autism, but it will be about general things like the color of our skin, the hair, the our hair color, our hair texture, the food that we eat, the languages that we speak. And on that note, with languages that we speak, that some children may not yet be confident with speaking, so they may require a bit of a prompt, or they may require a bit of a nudge to communicate, or they may require an iPad to communicate, or a
augmentative.
An augmentative device to communicate efficiently. But then we also want to then build in children from a young age, so the younger the better, a tolerance, an acceptance, a compassion. And the reality is, my dad, growing up, he did that for my family. So from a young age, whether it's 4 years old, 7 years old, at every point we were taught to volunteer, we were taught to care for others. And I think that's why we are all in similar fields of this sort of career of choice, because that has been inculcated. So it is disappointing to hear sometimes schools have confided and said that sometimes it's difficult to accept a special needs child because other parents of typically developing children may complain or may say, you know, why are there special children? I don't want my child to be associated. But I don't think that's the right attitude in a community. I think that we should take care of society. And so other families may have this difficulty with their child with special needs. We should help support that as a community that's caring and accepting. And one way is to volunteer, like to actually teach our kids to celebrate differences, to accept and to help. So a friend of mine, her daughter, they live in Australia. And when they came back, the little girl, 10 years old, I said, I work with autism. She perked up and she said, autism? I have a friend with autism in my class. And I went, oh, really? She said, yeah. Sometimes she gets really upset and she might hit at me. So then I just have to tell her, hey, calm down, you know. So this little 10-year-old girl is telling me how she prompts her friend. And then she says how sometimes my friend may not respond to me. So I have to like point at her or tap her a few times to get her attention. So she's telling me this. So just like how Sesame Street has just launched, right? We've been talking about this at EAP.
At least two videos.
And a full social story and a character called Julia who has autism. And Elmo is talking about Julia and talking about the difficulties Julia has, but how you can actually respond to her. So it's creating in children an ability to, hey, that girl is different or that boy is different. He may not talk as confidently, but he can still be my friend, which will address the teasing, the bullying, you know, because you become more caring. Yeah.
And I think, you know, U.S. is not always that rosy. Like I said, we came from a dark history of discrimination. And, you know, recent events, if you watched the news, we still have a lot of struggles, right, in terms of racial discrimination still exist. But, you know, we also worked hard in terms of integration, in terms of being an inclusive society. I think we do the same kind of campaign in US. You know, I have developed PowerPoint slides and talking to children, adapting materials. So I think changing minds one at a time and starting with, like I always say, baby steps, you know. I think any societal change starts with those.
Just like to add that my son has gone to Singapore with autism at age of 13 and he graduated at age of 19 and now he's working as a baker. So that was my inspiration, that he's working alongside normal children, that peers in his bakery has come to accept him as he is and he learned to give him some attention when he requires. But he's always the best in attendance and the best in decoration.
Over and over again, and they prove they can accomplish.
Yeah, and that is the inspiration in me for me to start the School of Light for other people's children. And but the cost of educating him is enormous burden to the family. And that's why I know educating special children in Malaysia is much more, because there's a lot of stigma attached to special education and special children family. These children has got a right to decent education, got a right to be helping and working among us, not to be kept in indoors and away from our sight of our people.
So looking at where our schools are, we also need good teachers. Are there enough teachers in Malaysia for special needs children?
Based on our last discussion, I think they mentioned that there's only 1,000 teachers that are trained in special education or with some background in special ed. So I don't think that will be sufficient, because even, I think if I'm not mistaken, the Putrajaya unit for the special education classes that they have, they only have, I think, a ratio of 4 trained adults, whereas like I think the schools in that district, as well as all the one-to-one meetings and all that, it totals it to about 400 children. So that definitely is not sufficient, because just in terms of attention, because the reality is, to run a good special education program, you require individual attention. And you can't do that with so many children to a person. The ratio has to be realistic. So at, let's say with us, we have a guideline of about 10 children to one supervisor, because you just, your mind space, you have to be able to give the attention, give the focus and give the time to actually observing every area of development that the child has. So if we have 7 areas of program, from early learner skills, academic skills, daily living skills, social skills, play skills, all of that has to be broken down to their component parts. It's pretty intense and it's very intentional. So I think when it comes to autism, the reality is that we've actually sort of passed the experimental stage of what works, what works, what works. I don't think that is as much a mystery anymore. There is research-based programs that it's like, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We know the wheel works. That's what we need to move. It's the same thing with autism. ABA works. I think if we can actually bring that to Malaysia and make that more accessible to families, we really hope that will be something that will help many more people. We feel that everyone in Malaysia, or children with autism, deserve the right to receive quality ABA. And at the moment, that's not a reality. Whereas I think in 36 or 37 states in the US, it is funded by the state government or insurance companies. Is that right, Dr.?
So in the US, like in the Midwest, Minnesota and Wisconsin, I know for sure, has the government special funding. Okay, so if the parents' jobs don't have insurance coverage, then the children can apply for government funding to obtain intensive treatment. But outside of that, in addition to that, we also have many states, and continuously more states are joining to this group that has mandatory insurance coverage for autism treatment. The reason that this comes into fruition is because from the counting the money sense, if we can intervene early, we can change the trajectory of many of these kids. Okay, they can lead a more independent life, be a contributing member of the society, just like Madam Sue's son. That will save the cost For the society,
right,
long term.
Yeah.
And also, I think it will save a lot of grief, and the loss of human life quality.
Also, when they are independent, they don't need so much community help.
Correct.
And they are able to look after their parents as well, instead of them, and also themselves.
Yeah.
If we train them from small to be independent and have the right living skills. So in our center, we have got one teacher to two or three students from small. Mm-hmm. And if they are a bit bigger and they're already having the basic living skills, then we have one teacher to three. And then we've got all the therapists, they take them out for their extra therapies. So when they go to mainstream and inclusive education, you find that those who have gone through this process of the special education or early intervention program, they do much better in the mainstream and in the integrated model in the government school.
Yeah. Joshua, I understand that the Early Autism Project recently concluded its yearly conference. What were some of the outcomes?
Well, Dr. Nan actually did a presentation on what prerequisite skills children actually need to be successful in school, and at the same time, what schools need to be to implement in order to prepare, basically. So both sides preparing. And it was very successful. I think we had about 10 different schools participate. I think the general gist is that in Malaysia, especially in the international and private school scene, the schools are moving towards the direction of inclusion. They want to help children, participate in classrooms. Mm-hmm. Now I think it's the implementation of the training of their teachers, the resource, actually developing the special education support program. units and programs within the schools. So we will be running a few trainings in different schools to help support the teachers there who all have a willingness to want to accept a child with special needs. But it's one thing, I think the main thing is it's inclusion, successful inclusion is not just about having someone physically present in the class.
Yeah, it's meaningful participation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So is the child able to understand group instructions? Is the child able to sit with the group? Is the child able to respond to a friend's social hi, greetings, turn-taking, play together, have snacks together? Those would be successful, meaningful experiences. So I think it was good because it also ironed out. I think Dr. Nan did a great job with an illustration of a house, saying that the foundation of the house would be the adaptive skills, how independent the child is able to be. Is the child able to successfully communicate their needs, successfully understand other people's communication? Is the child able to be toilet trained? And then the walls of the house would be social skills and behavior regulation. Is the child able to respond to instruction successfully? Is the child able to manage their self-stimulatory behaviors, not participate in aggressive behavior? So earlier, Madam Su said about stopping behaviors, but I think more than stopping the behavior, it's building skills so that the child can have a meaningful experience. Today, just before coming here, actually, we were talking to a mom about two brothers. So one brother has autism, one is a baby. Now the baby wants to have a meaningful relationship with the brother. Mm-hmm. How do we build that successfully from a young age so that little baby doesn't give up as well trying to kiss the brother and the brother's pushing him? But how can we build it like baby steps and actually make it meaningful? So we're starting with 2 to 3 minute, 5 minute play times that are just about bubbles and snow spray and having fun. So both boys enjoy themselves and they build a positive association, and that gradually builds up. That will translate to a school environment, because imagine a child who doesn't really enjoy the affection of other children or the
interaction. Or even their presence. Some children
absolutely
severely affected,
To be in a classroom with 20 other children is really, really, stressful. So to build a tolerance to that and to help them. So it's so detailed and intricate working with each child. But it can be very successful with the right support, the right expectation of each child as well.
What are your hopes for the centre?
My hopes for the centre is that we are able to train. Now we are training 335 students in my school. We hope to train 100 to 150 special needs children from the ages of 4 to 35 years old. And we need about 10 million ringgit to establish this school. And hoping that the school will take its course in 2 years' time. It will cost us 7.1 million to build the school and 3.4 million to equip the school. We hope to educate the community that this school is required so that we can work together with the mainstream schools, the public schools and the private schools, so that we can support special education for each child, and each child should have the means to be developed to their maximum potential. And money shouldn't be the criteria for not be able to have one-to-one interaction or therapy for them to acquire the skills that they need to go into mainstream inclusive education.
And finally, in conjunction with Universal Children's Day, would you each like to leave us a message?
I'm so glad to see people like Joe and all my colleagues at EAP and people like Madam Sue that continue to work despite all the challenges. It can be very daunting. I think we all need to work together and changing minds one at a time. That's how we get to succeed and get to a society that's tolerant and inclusive.
I think every child is individual and has their own personality characteristics. And I hope that in educating children, whether with autism or without, we will have a conscious, intentional effort to teach children to care for others and to bring that, you know, as an important part from a young age. I think that will definitely create a better society in Malaysia.
For more information on the Early Autism Project, do visit autismmalaysia.com. To get in touch with Madam Sue, you can call 06-763-1513. You can also email pjh1513@yahoo.com or visit sammccoyfoundation.com. Thank you all very much for coming in today. I've been speaking with Joshabed Isaacs, Dr. Nan Hui, and Madam Sue. We've been discussing how to integrate special needs children into mainstream schools. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.